We all know Chef Rick Bayless, whether you know him from his series Mexico, One Plate at a Time, or maybe it's from when he won Top Chef Masters. Maybe you've dined at one of his phenomenal restaurants. Well, needless to say, I was beyond excited to find out he was coming by to hang out. So let's get to it. I'm Lisa Allen, and this is Always Eating. Let's start here. You just got back from Hong Kong?
Yes, I just got back from Hong Kong. So if I sound less than together, it's because of that. Yeah, we were doing some events in Beijing and Hong Kong. It was just amazing.
So if you start dozing off, it's not because I'm boring you. Right. It's jet lag, right? Like, legit.
I will say it's all jet lag.
We'll say. Thanks. Okay, so you were doing some
events. We would.
Yeah.
We had a couple of former chefs that settled in Asia, one in Beijing. He was originally from Beijing, but he came and worked with us for a while and then moved back to Beijing.
Okay.
And then another one of our chefs worked with us and then settled in Hong Kong.
Wow.
And so we've been talking about this for a couple of years. And then I had to be in Hong Kong for some meetings at the end of this last week. And so I said, let's put together this thing. So we visited Shanghai, then went to Beijing, and then ended up in Hong Kong. Amazing things going on there.
Man, I'm sorry your life is so boring.
I know.
I'm
it's
really
so
sorry
boring.
About that.
I just sit around and twiddle my thumbs.
Yeah, right? I mean, what is the time difference that you're trying to
14 adjust? Hours ahead. Okay, so they're already in tomorrow.
I can't, my mind doesn't work.
I know,
that way.
It's really hard to imagine. And so every night before I would go to bed, I would get in contact with people back here because they were just getting up. And
okay.
So you kind of think about it on those terms, but it's hard to keep it in your head.
So at some point you are going to lay down and take a nap,
right? Well, maybe not until tonight. I've got a lot more work to do.
Good Lord. Okay. So, I mean, we know you. We've got, like, your resume is like 3 miles long, right?
Well, that's because I'm really old.
Come on. Me too. I'm starting to get into
this. You cannot say you're old. Come
Listen,
on.
Well, in the music business, they want you to, you know, everybody to be 23.
Of course.
You know?
Of course, yes.
So, like, oh my God, if you hit 40, yeah. You're basically a fossil.
I know.
We're like, now I'm like, I love being 40. Like, I love it. I want to tell everybody about it. I'm like owning it that I'm older. So getting Good. Older is such a privilege.
Yeah, it has a couple of drawbacks, but I will tell you the wisdom that you gain along the way is worth everything.
100%. And also, let's not pretend that the world didn't see you doing your Pilates inverted split thing on Instagram the other day, because
I'm happy to hear you saw that. I'm proud of being able to do that at my age. So
yeah, listen, I would be proud to do that at my age. I don't think that I could. So job well done, sir.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, I like to do all the acrobatic things. I'm really into yoga. I've been doing yoga for 25 years, and I like to do all the acrobatic things in yoga too. I will tell you, I like to look at the world from an upside down perspective, because I feel like that we just get too much in a rut. And when I can go upside down, I start looking at everything really different. And there was a period of my life for about probably about 10 years. I did handstands every day and I got super good at it. Then I had a shoulder injury and I'm working back to getting upside down that way. I can do my headstands, but I can't do my handstands.
So that you can just get like a different perspective?
But yes, I like to look at the world upside down because I think it's really fun. It gets you out of your normal way of thinking about things.
It's not a Batman thing.
It's not. It's just a really great way of seeing new possibilities.
Wow. Okay. So I think that your mind, and this is just a wild guess, but maybe wired that way to want to see more and experience more. Because
it is.
When I hear stories about, like, oh, you fell in love with Mexican culture and food when you were 14, all my brain could think of was, and yes, that's incredible, but like, how does a 14-year-old talk his family into going to Mexico City on vacation before, like, TripAdvisor or what, you know what I mean?
Before
How'd
everything,
you do that?
Everything. No, back in those days, our family had never gotten on an airplane for a vacation. It was really rare to get on an airplane. And back in those days, you had to have a real reason to do that. And I convinced my family that we should go to Mexico City for this. We closed our family restaurant 1 week a year. And so I convinced them that we needed to go to Mexico City. My parents were not adventurous. And so it's really remarkable that I convinced them of that.
For sure.
Then at 14, I booked all of the hotels and, or we stayed in one place.
Yeah.
But the hotel, I booked the airline reservations and all of that, planned the entire itinerary. But I have a vagabond's heart. I was born with a vagabond's heart, even though I didn't get to travel very much at all until I was 14. That was sort of what started it. And then eventually I ended up living in Mexico and I got a chance to start traveling around the world. But that really came much later in my life. But I really value being a citizen of the world, meaning you're not a tourist, you're a traveler. You go to places for two reasons. One, to see the potential that life has in store. And secondly, to get a mirror, to see yourself better. When you travel outside your own culture, you start seeing yourself in a new way, in a more complete way. But I also just am super curious about how human beings develop their culture and their food and how they maneuver through the day. And that's what you see when you visit places, not as a tourist, like on a tourist route or something, but really get deep into the culture. And that's why this last trip that I was on, where we were doing events in Beijing and in Hong Kong, that's my jam, man. I like to get into people's kitchens, into their restaurant kitchens, and see how they do things. How do they tackle this problem? How do they, when the tickets come in from the dining room, how do they make the food? How do they divide things up? How does it get out to the guest again? And that sort of thing is really fascinating to me. So we got to do that in two different places.
Let me ask you this, because you will know better, I think, than anybody. Every different culture kind of says, like, oh, we, you know, food is love and we love to feed our people. Right. Yeah. Everybody kind of owns that. So whether you're coming from an Italian family or Latino or whatever, but I think everybody does that.
Yes.
That.
Food, I think you find that everywhere in the world. Yes.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons I enjoy traveling so much, because I like to get a sense of that love. And I'm really into street food in a lot of places that I go to. And when you find that street food vendor that makes that one, two, maybe three dishes max, and they do it with their whole heart, and they're so proud of having perfected that dish or those dishes. It is so cool, because they just emanate that kind of love for what they're doing.
Give me an example of a street food that you just fell in love with.
Well, I will tell you that my wife and I have an apartment in Mexico City, and our first time going to that apartment, it was in a new building. I wanted to get an apartment in a new building because I wanted to put in a kitchen that I could bring our staff to, and we could really cook at sort of the restaurant level. And nobody's got a kitchen like that in a small apartment in Mexico City. So we built one. And the first day I went into this apartment, when we first, like, it was unveiled to us, we were really hungry, my wife and I, and we had nothing in the apartment. And I said, I'm just going to go to the street vendors down the block, half a block away. And there was this woman there, and she was making things with the fresh corn masa, the same dough that's used to make tortillas. And she was making these different shapes, these tlacoyos and huaraches and tetelas. And she was making all this beautiful stuff with the precision of a famous French chef. When you see them do their dicing and mincing and all that sort of stuff, she was bringing the same precision to that. And I watched her practiced hands make these things. And then I took them back to our apartment and bit into them. And everything was so exquisite. I had to go back down to her and say, oh my God, the love you pour into that dish. And it was cheap street food. I mean, it was just pennies.
Yeah, but it was good.
But it was good. And it was done with such love and care and knowledge and talent.
Yeah.
I mean, all of that stuff was going into it. And I just had to go back down and tell her how beautiful her food was. And she looked at me sort of like, oh, really? I just do what I like. And I was taken with that. And to me, that I've never forgotten that
one. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So we're celebrating, what, it's 37 years.
Yeah, it's a weird number to celebrate, but it means something to me because I will tell you that I grew up in a restaurant that was this wonderful barbecue restaurant that made all these different meats. In Chicago, we tend to think of barbecue restaurants as very simple and small menus, but this was a restaurant that had 30 different sides all made from scratch.
Wow.
And all these different barbecued meats. So I grew up with that, with the pride of cooking regional food. And because barbecue in Oklahoma, where I grew up, is the regional food.
Yeah.
So I grew up with that intense pride and care and all that sort of stuff. So I resonate with that wherever I find it.
So, but the 37 years.
Oh, the 37 years.
In that
restaurant that I grew up in, I mean, literally grew up in it because I loved being there. And so I spent every waking moment that I could in the restaurant. It lasted 37 years. And now that landmark that my parents set for me is now a landmark that I have achieved too.
Congratulations.
And so I'm super proud of it. And I know it's a weird number, but that's what we're doing.
Listen, it's an impressive number because,
rarely do restaurants last that long.
And loved that long. You know, that is a huge accomplishment.
I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you've been able to open so many other places here in town. And what I think is curious, I guess it occurred to me, okay, 37 years ago, River North was not the River North that we know it. So can we talk about that?
Yeah, okay. So
River North 37 years ago?
I wanted to put a place as close to downtown as I could afford.
Yeah.
And we could afford to be in River North, which was not called River North then. It wasn't called anything because nobody really wanted to be there because it was nothing but cheap bars and porno shops.
Right. That's what I understand.
Really, really scuzzy. Okay. I mean, really scuzzy.
Some sketch, but...
And so it is really funny that it has become what it's become now. And all the restaurants, we laugh and call it the gourmet ghetto because there's so many great restaurants there.
Yeah.
So that's what it has become. But for the first 10 years that we were there, I'll say, it was really sketchy. People used to call up and say, there's a parking lot across the street, but is it safe to walk across the street?
Yeah.
And we would just laugh at them and say, of course, it's safe to walk across the street.
So then how long after getting started did you really start to see the neighborhood change? Because even in saying 30 or 37 years, that is a huge difference in the neighborhood change.
We didn't see much change in that neighborhood almost for 10 years.
Okay.
So it was a really scuzzy neighborhood. But we had a really famous restaurant, Kitty Corner, from ours, and it was called Gordon. It hasn't been there for a while. Haleo's in that space right now. Before that, it was a restaurant, a really good restaurant called Naha. But the Gordon restaurant was there for 21 years.
Okay.
And it was a high-end fine dining restaurant. But people took taxis there. They rarely, I mean, they had valet parking, which we didn't have when we first opened, which made it harder for people to feel comfortable coming to visit us. But I will tell you that we could say we were adjacent to Gordon Restaurant, and people would say, okay, well, if you're close enough to them, I guess it's an okay neighborhood to go to. But it was considered to be very sketchy.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Now I don't even want to try to park my car in River
North. No, you don't. That's
the thing. Now we just switch it for Ubers.
It went, which is a smart thing to do because parking is really hard, but not as hard as over in the West Loop.
How about it?
West Loop is just impossible.
Fulton Market, West Loop area. Yeah. I'm just kind of like, just drop me from the sky.
Yes,
I don't know.
I know. It's super hard.
How to get around over there.
And I don't know why they've allowed that much density of restaurants without requiring that there be a lot of parking lots over there.
So many people from the suburb. I'm in the suburbs now. So, like, I have my car. I have my wheels with me no matter what, you know? So I don't want to park here at the station and then Uber there and then come back here to get my
car.
For sure. I'm like, why is this such a pain in the ass to get over there? But it's there's all of those restaurants just lined up up and down Randolph, all that. Maybe they think everybody lives in the city within walking distance.
Well, and a lot of people do over there in the West Loop. True. And so, and a lot of their clientele lives in that neighborhood.
You want to talk about what March 21st
I don't
is
want to
Chicago
talk about
now?
It, but if you want to talk about it, that's okay.
Listen, I want to talk about it only if you're comfortable being like, by the way, it's Chef Rick Bayless Day. It's a big deal.
I can't really say it without blushing. It sounds really silly to me. Well, but anyway, yes, the city has declared it that, okay?
Yeah, I think that's really just such a cool thing. Chicago's not a middle of nowhere place. It is a big deal. And to be honored with a day that is all about you, your accomplishments, and what you're doing moving forward is kind of a big deal.
I'm very honored.
Yeah.
I'm just uncomfortable saying it out loud myself.
Okay. No problem. We'll put it in the caption.
Okay.
No big deal. No big deal. Well, maybe this is something you might be a little bit more uncomfortable talking about. I've started to do a little bit of reading about the agriculture assistance that you have been offering for so long.
Yeah. We've been doing that for over 20 years now.
Yeah. So can we talk a little bit about that? What that looked like when you started, what that looks like moving forward. I ask mainly from a selfish place because my dad has a farm. I am so interested in that and to have somebody else show interest.
Well, we got started in giving assistance to some small farmers when one of our farmers brought in some beautiful spinach in the middle of February. And I said, how in the world do you get this? He was a Wisconsin farmer. And he said, well, I grow it in an unheated hoop house. And I said, oh, don't tell any other chef about this product that you have. I want it all. I want everything you can grow, but you're not even growing enough to supply our restaurant. He said, oh, no, I can't grow anymore. You know, we planted it one time of the year, then we harvest it through the winter months. And I said, well, what would it take for you to put in another hoop house so that we could have more of this spinach during the winter? And he goes, oh, it'd take me 5 years to be able to save enough money to put in another hoop house. And I said to him, it's like, what if we lent you the money? You put the hoop house in and then you paid us back in spinach. And that got us started down this road. And we realized that many of our farmers could be way more productive if they had the resources to in their farms to be more productive. It was just the resources that they were lacking. So we started this no interest loan program about 25 years ago, where we would lend them money to do some improvement and they could pay us back in a crop if they wanted to. Right. And that worked really well for about 5 years. Then we decided to turn it into a not-for-profit, a 501c3, raise money at the restaurant, and then distribute that money to people who gave us grant applications. Okay. So for 20 years, we've been doing it as a not-for-profit, and we've invested about $3.3 million in local farms over that period of time because our customers are very generous people. And so once a year, we do a big fundraiser and we raise up all the money that we are going to distribute that year. And then small farmers, it's all got to be family farms, they make grant applications to us. And then we usually award around 18, 20 of them a year. And you know what? But the sad thing is, no, it's not sad. It's a great thing, but it's remarkable that all they need is $10,000 to $12,000, maybe $15,000 to make improvements that are going to make them so much more productive and therefore more profitable. And it's not a huge investment.
Like, it's doable.
It's doable.
Yeah.
And so that most of the grants that we give are between $10,000 and $15,000 because that's what they need. They need to buy a new tractor. They need a down payment for that, or they need to put in a watering system, or they need to upgrade something on their tractor. You know, it's just anything like that that they need, or sometimes it's just a delivery vehicle. They want to invest in a delivery vehicle that's air conditioned so that they can move their stuff to a farmer's market and sell it there.
Yeah, I'm super appreciative of it. I'm from a farming family, not growing the business because my parents are retired.
Parents, grandparents are retiring and nobody's taking it over. over in the family, but a lot of the farms we invest in are new farms that are young families that are moving into it. And we really want to see them succeed, because if they succeed, they'll stay on the land and it won't get gobbled up by, you know, suburban sprawl.
For sure. And for me, I guess, growing up in Chicago, I mean, summer's at the farm, but thinking about farmers markets were like not around. They're everywhere now.
They're everywhere now. When we opened Frontera 37 years ago, there were no farmers markets in the city of Chicago. That didn't come until about 92, 93, something like that.
Okay.
So I was very interested in getting local product in our restaurants, because I had learned living in Mexico that you can't have a vibrant restaurant community without really vibrant local agriculture. And we didn't have vibrant local agriculture back then. You had to drive out into the country and stop at a farm stand to get locally grown vegetables and fruits. And so we decided that we really wanted to develop that. So we helped to sponsor those first farmers markets and to get people to buying the local stuff, so the farmers would continue to come into Chicago. And now they're those farmers markets are everywhere.
They're everywhere. They're like people's weekend plans.
Yes.
Like, that's what they're going
to
do on Sunday.
And we're happy about that. Now, I want to say to everybody listening to this, if you go to your farmers markets and you buy enough vegetables for Saturday night or Sunday night dinner, that's not enough. You need to also plan those vegetables to stretch into Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, because that's what's going to keep the farmers in business. And I live right by the Wicker Park Farmers Market on Sunday morning, and I see a lot of the young couples coming in and just buying enough fruits and vegetables to put on the table that night. But think more broadly than that.
Stock up.
Stock up.
Let's talk about this. What do we need to have stocked at home? I'm someone who either I have a full fridge or it is completely
empty.
Like if the apocalypse falls on a day I'm not prepared for, I am in trouble.
Okay.
So like, what do I need to have at home?
Well, everybody's got different tastes, and everybody's going to nourish themselves in a very different way. If you want to know what I have in my refrigerator all the time. Okay. So potatoes and onions and garlic are always in my refrigerator, because those can be the start of something. If I have to throw together a meal really fast, I could do it with that.
Okay.
I always have eggs, because you can make something that's really delicious with those things that I just mentioned. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, really delicious, really something good. I always have an herb plant, okay? And I'm going to encourage everybody to do this.
Okay.
If you have a south-facing window, get yourself a rosemary plant, because they're very hardy. Put them outside if you don't have a yard, you could put it out on your landing or your porch during the summertime. Bring it in. It just needs sun, that's all, and it'll do fine over the winter as long as you water it properly. But watering for rosemary plants is really easy. Just drench it really good once a week and it'll be fine. So that I always like, fresh herbs will make your food so much more exciting. And so rosemary is a good thing to have.
I'm like beaming right now because I have a rosemary.
You do?
I do.
I chose the right thing then. Okay.
Yeah, nailed it.
Okay.
Only because my boyfriend's like, we need to have this.
Yes.
So we do
and
have
you do.
This.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. But I'm like, nailed it.
And then it's a kind of an interesting thing. I always keep something green in my refrigerator.
Okay.
And the things that will last the longest are kale, that dinosaur kale, the good one to eat, not the ruffly kale.
Right.
Okay. So dinosaur kale and broccoli. It's called dinosaur, or sometimes it's called Tuscan kale.
Okay.
Or there's a whole bunch of different names for it. Black kale is another name for it. But anyway, that stuff lasts really long.
Okay.
And what I do is I put it in a quart container. I just kind of push it in there, seal it up, put it in the refrigerator. And the fact that there's no air circulation around it will keep it from going bad much faster,
okay?
It won't dry out and get awful. Same thing for the broccoli. I cut it in florets, put it into a one-quart container, put a top on it, and put it in the refrigerator. And it will last a week longer than anything. So I always want to have something green in my refrigerator. I always have Greek yogurt in my refrigerator. Butter, of course, because I like butter. butter. And let's see, citrus, I always have some limes and lemons because I'm sort of an aficionado of the cocktail camp. And so that gives me a lot of possibilities to do different kinds of cocktails.
Okay,
so
are you shaking or are you stirring?
Well, if it's got citrus in it, you're shaking, okay? If it's a sort of boozy, you know, Manhattan, old-fashioned type, then that's a stirred cocktail, okay? So those are the basics that I have in my refrigerator at all time. I always have bacon in the freezer, and I buy bacon, and then I put it into small little packages and freeze it so that I can pull them out, because if you ever need to flavor a dish, cutting up bacon and cooking it real fast, you can do like vegetarian. This is stupid, I know. But it's like, if you could take a vegetarian dish and throw a little bacon in it, and it's so delicious. So I always have bacon for that. I make fried rice with bacon and egg in it all the time and stuff like that. And every time I make rice, I'm a fan of a rice cooker, and I like to make all kinds of food, but I tend to go to Chinese food a fair amount, and so I will always cook rice in a rice cooker for that, and then I'll take the leftover rice and I'll put that in the freezer so that I can pull that out and make fried rice anytime I need to.
Smart.
I'm a very, very efficient cook, okay? And my wife always says, oh, there's this little bit of this left over, so should I just throw it out? No, but save that, because I can fix it.
I can turn
it into something. I can put it in my fried rice if I do that. Or if we get home late and she says, I'm really hungry, and I could say, give me 20 minutes and I'll have something on the table, because I have these things already squirreled away in my refrigerator or in my pantry.
So I'll tell you that, just as someone who is constantly thinking about food, but mostly about eating it, not about cooking it, I will have in my mind, like, I would like to eat that later. So are you thinking, I would like to try to cook that later?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
I'm always squirreling away things that, like, I come across. You know, I know a lot of people say going to the grocery store is their least favorite activity. It's my favorite activity in the whole wide world. And in fact, my wife hates when I go to the grocery store by myself, because it may take me an hour and a half to get out of the grocery store, only because I'm going through every aisle and I'm reading labels and I'm looking at things and all that. But one of my favorite activities on a Sunday afternoon is to go to Chinatown and go to the market there and see what's there. And that's when I'll buy a few things, and then I'll start to think about, I don't know how to cook with this thing, so I'll do a little research and find a recipe. And then that's the way I keep fresh in what I do, is that I'm always cooking with new things.
Have you been to the new Gangnam Market over in West Loop?
The West Loop one.
Yeah,
I've been to that. I only went there once. That one's kind of a flashy one.
Yeah.
But the new one down north of Chinatown, a little bit, 88 Marketplace. I love that place, but it's like a whole football field, and you have to know what you want when you go in, because otherwise you'll just get lost in it. And I made the mistake the first time that I went there, the weekend before Chinese New Year, and it was such mayhem.
I bet.
But it was fun, and I enjoyed sort of exploring it. I didn't come out with very much because I just kept getting sidetracked and all of that. Anyway, they also at 88, they have a really, really good food court.
Oh, nice.
And so you can go in there, and it's an interesting place, but it's a really sort of delving into the culture as well as the food.
I get kind of overwhelmed when I go to a market that is too big. I get overwhelmed. We used to go to a couple of them along Dempster and just go. And I'm like, I don't even know what this is. Let's just buy it and see what it is. You know, figure it out.
There's a lot of really good Middle Eastern markets there on Dempster.
On Dempster?
Yeah. I've been up to go through those a few. And oddly enough, and I'm not going to remember the exact name of this place, but over on western side of the Loop, but not all the way to West Loop, there's a really good Indian market over there.
Okay.
It's really, really good. It's not too big.
Okay.
Well, when you said that, you get overwhelmed, because I'm the same way. But this this market used to be super tiny, and they didn't have a full range of things, but they've moved in the last couple of years, and now it's a really good market. And the fact that it's downtown, well, H Mart is downtown right. too, and I love stopping at H Mart yeah. because they have not only Chinese stuff like you'll find over at 88, but they have all kinds of Indian stuff and Korean stuff and Japanese.
H Mart, there is an H Mart though, I think, up in Niles, right?
The Niles is the big one. That's a really huge. Big one.
Yeah.
This one is very compact, the one that's on Jackson.
Okay.
And I love going to that one.
I haven't been there.
And
yet.
That, oh, you should go. And it's got a parking lot.
Amazing.
It's really, Sold. Really great. I highly recommend that place.
Okay, cool.
And they have a very small food court in that one, but it's good. I've eaten food there too.
Okay.
One of my favorite things is to go to these places and then have lunch there.
Yeah.
Because it gives you
Same.
Something else to eat, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, you've got some big stuff coming up. You've got the ticketed dinner.
Ticketed
happening.
Dinner on the 21st. So, on the, what shall we call
what
it?
What are we,
the,
call
what
that
are we
day?
Calling it? It's the alleged Rick Bayless Day
yeah.
on the 21st.
You can say it. It's all about
okay.
me.
Okay.
Go ahead,
not,
own it.
It's not it's, all about
it's
me.
All about,
it's all about making good food for people. And so we are doing.
I'm just trying to make
you blush right now. You, look at me. Here it is that I'm all red in the face. I will say that it's a really fun, it was a fun thing for us to do to go back to our original menus
oh.
and resurrect all this stuff
nice.
And so we're doing a whole dinner of what did Frontera taste like in its early incarnation. So
oh that's cool.
So we're doing a dinner for that to celebrate our 37th.
Yeah, that is massive, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm really, really proud of that. I'm proud to say that I came from a family that had a restaurant for 37 years and did really traditional food, and my wife and I have had that restaurant for 37 years doing traditional food, but a different tradition.
Yeah. Hey, if you're going to fall in love with a culture, yeah. I mean, I do love Mexican culture. Half of my family is Mexican. Yeah. I get it. I've spent all day the day before Christmas.
You're making tamales. Yes, I know.
For like hours till yeah, my back
yeah.
hurts.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I get it. And I love your appreciation for it too. Ooh, yeah, yeah. You do have another book?
I'm always working on books. Okay. So I've got a couple more in the pipeline right now. I decided that 9 cookbooks wasn't enough, so I'm working on a couple more. But there is another aspect of what we do at Frontera and Topolobampo and Shoko and Bar Sotano, all 4 restaurants that are stuck together there on Clark Street. My wife and I are really passionate about Mexican art.
Ooh.
And so for 40-some years, we have been collecting Mexican art.
Okay.
And our walls in the restaurants are just covered with mostly Oaxacan artists from the southern part of Mexico, because it's, I guess, for my wife and I, it's our favorite place. It's the place in Mexico that we resonate with most. And we have this large collection, okay, 100 pieces or something
oh, yeah.
like that. And we move it around and we put some of it in storage and we change it from time to time in the restaurant. But we decided that we were going to put together a book of our collection.
Nice.
And so that is going to come out just in another week or so. And that book coincides with a special menu that we're doing in Topolobampo.
Oh.
So in our fine dining restaurant, the one that has the Michelin star, we do themed menus and we tell you a story through food.
I love that.
And this menu that's coming up is a story through food and art. So every dish is inspired by a piece of art. And so we have now put together a collection of our most famous pieces in our collection in this book. And at the back of the book, there's these really beautiful pages where you've got a piece of art and you've got a dish right next to it. So it shows you how we think about food as it relates to art. So not only do you get the biographies of all of these amazing artists and examples of their work, but you also get a little example of our art in the restaurant and how we are inspired by these beautiful works of art that hang on the walls.
Art you can eat.
Art,
now,
this is art you can
you
eat.
You are speaking my language.
Yes, all
now.
Right.
When does that come out?
It comes out next week.
Oh, soon.
Yeah,
okay.
Really, really, really soon.
Wow. Does your brain ever just rest?
No.
Okay.
I'm a curious person. If you ask me, what's my ideal vacation? It would be to go to some other country and explore their cuisine. That's what I find really relaxing and innovating at the same time. I'm just a really curious person. So my relaxation is going to be to investigate something. That's what I do for fun.
Yeah, like in my mind, my vacation is like, I want to go to a beach. I want to lay there for 10 hours and do nothing.
And for me, that's my definition of hell.
Really?
It actually is. I'm not a beach person. I don't like to sit still.
Yeah.
But if you tell me we're going to go on a hike, I'll say, oh, that would be great. Let's go.
Okay. See, I didn't see that coming from you. I guess I imagined that you would be like, sure, let's go to the beach. I'm going to round up 50 people and we're going to cook a whole animal and we're going to throw a party.
Yeah, I could do that.
Like,
I would say to find a fisherman, let's go fishing. And then we're going to build a fire on the beach. And then we're going to put together some way to roast this whole fish or something like that. I would do that.
Yeah.
Yes, that would be fun for me. But if you ask me just to sit still and say, and people tell me this all the time, say, you need to slow down and just rest. And I say, you can do that when you die.
Right. We're all going to do that eventually. No, I love it. I love the energy. And let's be honest, I can't really sit still. I get it. And I respect it. Man, I just think it's so damn impressive to see you like going and doing all that you're doing and have been
fun.
For so long. It's really cool.
It's fun to me. I think life is just has so many opportunities and possibilities. And I want to explore them all.
I mean, we're here for it. We're here for it. Thank you for being here with us
today. Oh, it's my pleasure to have this conversation.
Like I told you on the elevator on the way up, I was like, man, I am out of breath. I'm so excited to meet you.
That makes me so happy. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely.
Yeah? I legit could talk to you for 4 hours. You've got the best story. You're like the Indiana Jones, but with like a chef's coat.